Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. I am your host, Bill Sickens. Joining me, Bill and Gretchen, welcome to this week's show.
Hello.
Hello there.
So believe it or not, we are already to this time of year, and that time of year is the annual season of giving. And this year, User Friendly has picked a charity that we're going to support, and we are privileged to be able to support William Temple House. They're doing a program, a plea for this fall, to make some money for covering what they offer. And basically what this is an organization that has been around for 60 years. They're in downtown Portland, which is our home city. And it's the only place in Portland where someone can get low-cost counseling, whether or not they have insurance, shop for free groceries, and get connected to other resources. And with the food insecurity stuff that's going on right now, these kind of things are extremely important. So we will be interviewing some of the people from this great charity next week, getting some more details on it. And for more information, check out our website at userfriendly.show. All right, before we get into the news, I also just wanted to touch one other thing here. We've got a slight scheduling change in the topics. This week was going to be our gift episode. We're going to be moving that up 2 weeks. So if you heard it in the tease during the week, you weren't hallucinating. Just sometimes things get swapped around. So we're going to be doing our Q&A this week, and then we'll be doing that in 2 weeks. So, all right. That being said, what do we have in the news?
All right. Peloton issues recall for 833 bikes over faulty seat posts.
Well, you know, Peloton's not having their best year lately, these last few years, and if it was only 833, it wouldn't be a big deal, but it is actually 833,000 of their bike.
Did I say it wrong?
You said 833. I wish it was that small of a number.
Oh, man.
But what we've got going on here is a situation that could be fairly unpleasant. And what they're having is the seat posts are breaking and detaching during use. So while you're riding your bike, your seat breaks and you fall off. They're having reports of these breakages, two reports of injuries resulting from the falls. These were the bikes sold, called the Bike Plus, between January 2020 and April 2025, and were manufactured in Taiwan from 2019 to 2022. Ooh. So take a look at what you have and check with Peloton to make sure that you don't have a recalled model. And if you do, you let them know, and they're sending out a free redesigned seat post replacements that owners can install themselves. So it is fixable. But you do want to check this out so that you don't have a bad day exercising.
Didn't Senator Reed fall off a bike like this and hurt himself some years ago?
You know, come to think of it, Senator Reed was the state senator for Nevada, for anybody that doesn't know, and was in for a long time, you know. And I believe there was something like that. I vaguely remember that. So, yeah, you do want to be careful. Usually this stuff is pretty rock solid, and you know, this is an exception, not the rule on these things, but it's still, it can happen. So, you know, so in this case, definitely if you have one of these bikes, get the parts to fix it. You just don't want to play with that.
Always impressed by how some parts that have been around for hundreds of years can be screwed up. Yeah. Anyway, experts issue warning of harmful side effects of Windows shutdown. Here's what's happening.
Speaking of which, So this is something that's really starting to ramp up, and it's an interesting topic. You've sent in a lot of questions about this, and we wanted to hit on some of the numbers here. So in October, Windows 10 was phased out. Microsoft decided it was obsolete in favor of Windows 11. And we've been talking about how you'll lose support unless you, you know, stand on your head and do a dance around a fire to get it for another year, or in the alternative, just pay $30. But what's happening here is they're starting to realize the amount of e-waste that this is creating. So what's happened is there's a lot of computers, laptops, desktops, and so on out there that are perfectly capable of running Windows 11 from a speed and memory standpoint. But the new operating system has specific requirements for the components that are in the computer. For a technical term, that's TPM 2.0. What that's about is it helps with securing the computer and some other things like that, which is a laudable goal. But at the end of the day, this change has created a situation where a lot of equipment's going to go in the landfill prematurely. And here's some of the numbers. There's a significant amount of salvageable metal in this stuff, $2.1 billion, 1.6 billion pounds worth of gold, almost 100 million worth of copper, 33 million of silver. So you're looking at 1.8 billion pounds or $2.4 billion in stuff that's just going to be thrown out. All that is needed is a way to extract the metal through recycling, which does not exist in a lot of places. So this is an incredible amount of e-waste. And it's creating a situation where people are quite upset and looking at this and figuring out, well, how can we go longer? Well, you can extend your security updates. That type of a thing is an option, but you do have to pay an annual fee for that, which starts, I think, at $30 or something this year and then increases exponentially, but you can get it up for up to 10 years. You can tell them you're a business and get the business version, which includes the updates for the next 10 years. Little side thing there, although it will cost money initially to do that. Or you can use another operating system like Linux or something of that nature. So there are some things that you can do with the older machines. But for most people that just want to turn their laptop on and have it boot up and they do what they need to do without, you know, having to worry about these things, it is creating a problem here. Now, there are some ways to be able to deal with this e-waste. If you have that in your area for recycling, these things is a good option. The other side of it is, well, what I'm doing is use them for something else. Windows 10 doesn't stop working. It just stops getting updates. So there's still a lot of stuff that you can do with a computer at that point. And one of the things that I've been hearing from a lot of you is giving it to your young kid to learn how to work the computer. Take it offline, you know, so you don't have that issue. But it is something where if they damage it, well, it was going to be thrown out anyway. So that's just an option, getting creative, you know, and that kind of a thing. But I do think it's important, this being something that kind of has called this out, that when things change and technology does change very quickly, but when you do something like this, you can actually create a huge negative environmental impact. And that seems to be what's happening here.
All right. Farewell to the International Space Station. NASA confirms that it will fall into the sea and that they still don't know who will be its replacement or what will be its replacement or maybe who is doing the replacing.
Yeah, I think all of the above there. Well, this is a huge amount of e-waste on our previous topic.
Oh, yeah.
They're deorbiting in 2030. So that date's coming right up. It's 2025 now, so 5 years. Now, a lot can change in 5 years, so you don't know what's going on. But right now, today, that's the decision that's been made. And it's like the thing, don't throw your old shoes away before you get a new pair. You know, you can still use them. Mm-hmm. But right now, there are no plans, no budget or anything like that to replace the space station. So, you know, we'll see what actually happens and where this actually goes. But right now, that is the plan, is bye-bye space station.
STEM is becoming as important as knowing how to read.
Yeah, and I have to agree with that headline. This is something that has been important to us here at User Friendly and with my weird technology company that we've supported openly over the years and do things like working with the local schools and that type of a thing. Science, technology, engineering, and math is what that acronym stands for, STEM. And in today's world, we are in a situation where if you don't know how to use technology, you're just not going to get very far. And this isn't, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it's like, okay, you'd be a computer programmer, work in a data center or something like that. You need to understand that. But for other things, you might not. It's pretty much, not 100%, but pretty much every occupation now depends on technology for something. And even if it isn't the primary thing, you still need to use a computer. You still need to know the basics of it. You still probably will need to troubleshoot it. Now, that's one part of it. But the other part of it is some numbers that I thought were very interesting. So 24% of the U.S. labor force, that's 36.8 million workers, works in some kind of a STEM occupation. And that number is projected to grow by 8.1% by 2034. So this is, you know, a big deal from that standpoint. And the other one that's interesting here is if you look at the average wage. So the average wage when this survey was done, which was last year, so 2024 numbers, was $49,500. The average wage for STEM occupations is $103,580. And I can tell you it does go much higher in certain situations. So this is something that's definitely worth looking into, but also something that really needs to be offered at, I think, the elementary school level. So there's a lot of things going on at occupations that we're just talking about, but different organizations that hire in these ways, that are starting to get together and put forth a plea to add STEM education where it doesn't exist right now and improve upon it where it needs to be improved upon. Just something going forward that's going to be important. Always, if you are unable to read, if you're illiterate, that makes it much harder to find a job. And we're looking at the same kind of differential if you don't know how to use technology.
All right. Shield AI has unveiled XBAT, the world's first AI-piloted fighter jet. So tell us about that.
I can't do that, Dave.
Okay, Dave. Hal?
Hal. Yeah, that would be Hal, yes. Yeah.
I was going to say Dave's not here, but, you know, that doesn't work.
Yeah. So actually, this is kind of cool. It's a plane run by AI. It's a fighter jet, is the what you said. And vertical takeoff and landing. And one of the things that I've been seeing, there is a feeling that airplanes that require runways and that kind of stuff are going to be coming more and more a thing of the past. So we'll be calling those aeroplanes. A lot of the new technology that we're seeing does have vertical takeoff and landing. So it requires less space, and there's a lot of advantages to that. I don't think we're going to be seeing that on the 737s anytime soon, but a lot of things, you see that out there, like the jet suits are the same way, that you just can take off and land. So in addition to it being able to launch without runways, it's controlled by a system called Shield AI's HiveMind software. That's a name. Mm. It can fly, navigate, and coordinate missions without human input, even when GPS or communications are jammed. The aircraft's stealth design includes internal weapon bays, a range of over 2,000 nautical miles, and a service ceiling of above 50,000 feet. So it's pretty formidable.
Wow.
Yeah. Three giant solar outbursts explode towards Earth, prompting aurora forecasts across U.S.
Yeah, right. I've been told this so many times. We're going to have an aurora, you know, but I'll believe it when I see it, right? No, this is solar storms. They cause the aurora borealis, geomagnetic storms, and the three eruptions will converge on our planet almost simultaneously, and this will cause the aurora to reach lower latitudes than where they normally are. So we should be able to see them up here in the Oregon area again, and they're forecasting this in a lot of different places. And these are pretty to look at, but they do screw with electronics, and it can cause things like radio signals and other embedded microcontrollers and that type of a thing to act weird and malfunction and that kind of thing. So if you get to a point, and we saw this last time too, where you're using your computer or doing whatever you're doing, and it feels like the internet is sluggish or something weird's going on. It's just not quite right. It's there, but it's not. Or if you do one of the people that still do things like ham radio and stuff, it can interfere with that. And having three of them at the same time could be interesting. I don't know. They're saying it's going to be severe. And with that classification, I think we just should be prepared for some interruptions. All right, so that's it for the news this week. Next segment, we're going to be going into the Q&A and answering some of your questions that you have sent in. We haven't done one of these in a while, so this is going to be a lot of fun. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, let's talk pop culture. Gretchen, you have a couple of television, well, one's a television show and one's a movie, I think.
Yeah, I've been binge watching just stuff, and I used to like Westerns as a kid. I'm a Generation X kid, and we saw Westerns, a lot of them. So we kind of grew up on them. So I came across this series called Wild West Chronicles, and it was from 2020 to 2024. So it was four seasons. And the star of this was a fellow named Jack Elliott, and he is Bat Masterson. Okay, so I'd heard of Bat Masterson as a kid when they used to advertise those Wild West books, the Life series. They would do all kinds of different topics, and I believe it was Life that had a Wild West series, and they would talk about all these different, famous individuals.
It was quite a well-known one, too.
Oh, yeah, and well, anyways, Bat Masterson, I was like, okay, I'll check it out. And I really enjoyed these. I think these stories, it says when I looked it up, for the most part, they are based on reality. And these are recreated using something they called a dramatic docudrama style. So it, to make sure that it's entertaining, you know. But it seems like these, for the most part, are fairly realistic and following probably the articles that he used to write. And the actor who presents it did a really nice job of playing the character of Bat Masterson. And all of the other supporting characters and writers, nice. Nice settings. It's worth, if you like Westerns and you want to hear something that's a little more based in reality, these were really fun. So you get four seasons of it, and it's in color, and it looks like it's probably been filmed in California, maybe Arizona, you know, a few places like that, because I do recognize some of the landscape, and it's just good fun. Yeah. And so you get to hear about characters like Wild Bill Cody, Calamity Jane, and some other unknown ones, such as some of the Black Cowboys. And there was a Black, I think, Texas Ranger, which I had no idea about. That was a complete shock. So it was like kind of cool to hear these stories. So then,
And I'm just going to throw this comment out here at you, because, you know, with Western stuff, we see a lot of things that are very sensationalized, and it's not a period that really needs that.
No,
in my opinion, you know,
no,
there's a lot of things that, you know, that you can go into, and it's very fascinating. A lot of unsung heroes. I mean, you know, think about really who made this stuff run, like the engineers of the period and that type of thing. And all of this existed like it does now. But all the stories are about, you know, gunfights with cowboys and all this stuff. And that's not really what it was about. That kind of stuff happened. But that wasn't certain. That was the, you know, there other stuff happened that was a lot more often.
Yeah. And so I had started binge watching Death Valley Days, which is on a similar vein. But from what I read about, it sounded like their stuff, even though it has a very authentic feel to it, they did kind of dramatize some things, you know, so it's not as realistic as this set with a Bat Masterson. So
where do you find it? It's streaming on
It's streaming on Amazon.
Amazon
Prime. So then we switch up to, I'm feeling like watching something else, and I come across the Fantastic Four movie, and that's on Disney Plus. And I kind of balked at watching the Fantastic Four, because it just seemed like in years past, whenever I came across these characters, there was always this stereotype, the big guy who kind of turns into this kind of rock type creature. He's always angry. And the fire guy is always doing stupid stuff, the brother. And it just got so repetitive and boring. And I'm like, okay, do I want to watch this? And it's like, okay, I've paid for Disney Plus. Let's watch the movie. And I was kind of pleasantly surprised. They took some direction that I wasn't really expecting. And I'd love to hear what our friend Michael from Read the Freaking Comic, what he says about this, because I know there's lots of politics and drama concerning different versions of characters. Like the Silver Surfer was a girl this time. And I know the Silver Surfer is supposed to be a guy, but she was a really fascinating character. And I'm wondering, did she stay true to the original one? I have no idea. I'm not a comic book person. So I'd love to hear what Michael's take is on it. Do either of you guys know anything about the Fantastic Four?
I wasn't a fan.
Oh, okay.
I think there's four people.
Oh, one of the things was, is they kind of kept that 50s retro feel, which I thought was cool. The whole movie is kind of set in this cool 50s retro. It's kind of like a George Jetson feel. So I thought that was clever. I liked that. So, Bill, did you get...
I haven't seen it yet myself, so it's interesting to hear this, because I think I would like to now. I wasn't quite as optimistic, but it sounds like they actually maybe did a nice job.
Yeah, and it wasn't so heavy based on all of the punching and shooting and blowing things up. There was an actual story with some feelings going on in there, and it's like, oh, and they didn't, you know, shove the angry guy, you know, the angry guy who got, you know, changed into a pile of rocks, or the stupid brother story. And they kept that at, they kept that like reasonable and more realistic, at least in my opinion. So I don't know. I'd love to just hear what other people have to say, because I'm not really a Fantastic Four person. So let's hear from our listeners.
Michael's going to be back with us in a couple of weeks anyway, so I'll make sure that this question gets posed, because, like you say, he would be the one to answer it and would know more about this stuff. Now, I do have to say one thing, and not being someone that knows that much about this franchise, but if I got turned into a pile of rocks, I think I'd be angry.
Yeah. But he still has special abilities, and people still like him.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying they don't. I'm just kidding. But yeah,
oh, okay.
You know, you can see where that would come from. So anyway, so speaking of science fiction and all that, give us an update on Cyberhawk.
She's in process. Oh, my gosh. She's in process with Amazon. And this has been a never ending battle of weird little things going wrong and trying to find this person and get that straightened out. And all of the authors we've had before who have expressed less than happy thoughts about the editing process and the publishing process, well, they're right. They're absolutely right. Oh.
I know, with the proofs that came back, it looks like getting closer, but just some of the specifics, the cover was backwards.
Oh, yeah.
And for some reason, the page numbers disappeared. So we're looking through this thing, kind of figuring out, because everything's off one line through the whole book. Well, and it starts adding up because, you know, your page two has two lines, right? So,
but that was the Night School Journal, not Cyberhawk. So we're dealing with two books.
Night School Journal, we're dealing with two different books. Yeah, you know, I probably thank you for that because, yeah, Night School Journal and Cyberhawk's Rise of Heroes, those are two separate books. They're coming out at the same time here, and if everything goes right, in about a week, they'll be available to purchase. But yeah, it's like finalizing these things. Font looks great. The rest of it came out well. So that's all good. But weird little things, and you got to pay attention to the details, you know, although the cover being backwards was more than a detail.
Yeah, it was kind of slappy in the face. Hey, I'm backwards. Like,
No, but like I say, these are, we're finally getting to that point, and they're going to be available. Obviously, we'll announce it here where to and how. Plug, 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 plug. But at the end of the day, it's been a journey, and you don't really understand it until you've gone through
it's
it.
It's a learning experience.
Our authors. Yeah. Yeah. It really is. You know, when it comes down to looking at these different things, and I know that you're working on another one that's under wraps right now, that'll be out next year. So, you know, maybe things will go a little bit smoother now that we've been through the process a couple of times and know what to look for. Alrighty. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back with your questions after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Check out our website. That's where everything user friendly sits. Userfriendly.show is the page to go to. You can find links to our YouTube videos. We are starting to have those now. You can find links to all of our past shows, and you can find links to submit your questions and your comments. And you can also find the links for Tech Wednesday and instructions on how to include them in your flash briefing on your smart speaker. I will leave it smart speaker so we don't activate everybody's smart speaker saying it. But we have these things available. Check them out. And we want to hear your feedback. It's the best thing is how we do our programming, the userfriendly.show. So we used to do these a little more often. I don't know why we've kind of not. And I think they're a lot of fun to do. And that's these Q&As. And a lot of the questions you send in, what we do is we go through them and kind of vet everything and then take the top ones in a given time period and then come up with the question. So the questions that we're asking might not be a direct question, but they will summarize a set of direct questions that were asked that are of the same topic. And that's the way that that we do it. Now, one of the things that's changed on this is back when we first started, well, we had some trouble getting 10 questions. Today, we do have to tone them down or this would be a 10-hour show. So, which is a good thing. I'm happy to have that problem. So with no further ado, let's jump into our questions. What do we have?
What are software languages?
Yeah, and this one I'm kind of looking at like, what? You know, what are we actually talking about here until I got some context that there are people that are out there. And I guess this actually wouldn't be that unusual if you're not in technology, but software languages and spoken languages are two different things. So a software language is like COBOL or PHP or C Sharp or Rust or something like that. These are the languages that you use that are basically a way to interface with the computer in human language and have it convert to computer code. Versus spoken languages like English, Spanish, German, that kind of a thing. So it's interesting because this has come up and it's something that I think is important to put out there because the context does make a huge difference. And it's just important to know that if you're looking into something that you're probably going to be programming in English as far as a spoken language goes, if you're in an English speaking country, your notes and function calls and all that type of thing will be that. But the language itself is whatever the language is, which is not in any way related to the spoken language that you're using.
What is a Nixie tube?
Yeah, this question's come in a couple of times because we've talked about some of this year, and I have a thing for Nixie tubes. I don't know why. I just think they're cool and kind of industrial looking mid-century. But basically what it is the story on these goes something like this, at least from what I've been told, is that during the Cold War, we came up with segmented LED displays, and for a while the USSR couldn't replicate them or didn't for whatever reason. So they came up with a design where it's basically a vacuum tube or valve, depending on where you are, is what you call them. And what a vacuum tube did, for anybody that doesn't know, is prior to modern solid state circuitry, you had tubes in your radio, television, that kind of a thing. And they would warm up and perform different functions like the solid state transistors and stuff do now. So what the Russians did is they took this a step further, and actually I think these were created in Ukraine, if we want to go to the detail on that.
Yeah.
But what they did is they created a vacuum tube. It lights up just like any other vacuum tube, but instead of being a transistor or something of that nature, there's a metal wire in it for each number from 0 through 9. And depending on how you send voltage and what contacts you engage on it, depends on which wire set lights up. So basically it's a counter, like what we would use an LED display for. And there's a lot of what they would call new old stock of this stuff out there. I don't believe they're made anymore anywhere. They were sold in the United States in the early 80s. I know that because I have a box from Radio Shack that has a few of them in the original wrapping. But the new old stock is quite plentiful. So they're making clocks and other things out of it now that you can go buy a new clock that's Nixie tube. I even have a watch that uses Nixie tubes.
It's really cool
because these are, yeah, it's cool, you know, and it just looks almost steampunk kind of.
It looks very steampunk. Yeah. And,
maybe that's why I like it. But yeah, on Bill Builds, I have a voltage meter that of all things used Nixie tubes in the display. It was made as a Heathkit in the late 70s. So it didn't work when I got it. Needless to say, we fixed it up because I need a Nixie tube, you know, meter. I have no idea how accurate this thing is, but it has Nixie tubes. So that's all that matters, right? But at the end of the day, it's something to check out. If you go search, you can see pictures of them. There's different styles, different sizes, and just something that the aesthetic is something that I've always really liked.
Is Windows 11 free?
Yeah, so this is a comment that I think I made, and I sort of remember when along these lines that was interpreted as Windows 11 is free. And we got a lot of you writing in to remind me that that is not true. So I wanted to give a little bit of a context to this because it actually does make sense to know how to deal with this. We talked in the first segment about Windows 10 and replacing and that kind of a thing. Windows 11 is not free. If you were putting together a new computer and you wanted to run Windows 11, you would buy a license for it. It costs, I think, $99 for the home edition, a little bit more for pro. But what Microsoft has been doing is basically if you have a valid Windows license, I know it goes back to at least Windows 7, if not before that, that's considered an upgrade path to a free upgrade to Windows 11. So it's not free exactly, but it is very close to it in most situations. And that's where that kind of an idea came from. And also, this is something too, because I build a few machines where I've needed an official, you know, license going forward. And if you buy it now, there's a lot of places you can get it. In fact, you can get, you know, some good prices on places like eBay for legitimate copies. Just make sure you're getting a legitimate copy. But it actually comes with a card with your serial number on it and a flash drive. And that's, you get this little tiny box with those two things in it. And that's one way to get it. Or, of course, you can go to Microsoft's website and download a tool that will make the flash drive. You can install Windows 11 without a license key as well. There's a button on there that says, I don't have one right now. And if you're running it unlicensed, at least from what I've seen, there's no def to it. It just nags you. There's a thing in the bottom of the screen that says, this is not a licensed copy of Windows 11, you know, or something to that effect. But it doesn't stop operating. But just to kind of clarify that point a little bit, it's not free in the sense of like Linux or something of that nature. But Microsoft has just, let's say, made it very easy to have a legal copy of it. And part of the reason for that, I think, is going forward is the desktop operating systems is not, you know, the cash cow that it once was. But a lot of things are changing these days. A lot of users use tablets. There's competitors, you know, with Macintosh, which has been there. But also things like Chromebook and Linux has kind of come into its own, that you can use one of those systems and most computer users will be just fine if you're doing what most of us do, and that's browse the web and watch videos and, you know, write a document and those kind of things. If you get into some specialty stuff, like say you're working with the Adobe product suite, then you would need Windows or Mac. They don't have that for Linux or anything else. So it depends on what you're doing, but that is a much smaller market share than even 10 years ago, where everybody had a desktop and a laptop, and unless it was Apple, it pretty much ran on Windows. So the other thing that's coming from this too, and I'm going to go ahead and just give a little bit of a soapbox here, so I apologize for this in advance. I'm starting to see commercials being pushed into the Windows Start button. And while there are ways to get in there and more or less shut that down, it's like you turn on your computer and you have an ad. I consider that to be a little bit invasive, in my opinion.
Or annoying.
Annoying would be another word for it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I can think of some others, but we need to be radio friendly here. But that being said, free is not free. It just depends on how you pay for it. So if you don't give money, you're paying for it through watching ads or providing personal information or data, you know, that kind of a thing. So at the end of the day, that's kind of what's going on here. Now, at one time, Microsoft had talked about making Windows a monthly subscription, which was not accepted very well. So right now, I don't know. I think on some of the commercial stuff, I'd have to look this up because I've heard of this bits and pieces and that there may be some licensing models where they did do that, but then I couldn't find any when I looked for them. And it's still, you download it, you do that. So it seems like what they're doing is they're making it easy to get to the operating system, making it easy to install, and then sending some commercials and stuff. And if you don't have a previous license, then you get to pay for it too. And that's, you know, kind of where that's going at. But again, just to confirm, Windows 11 is not free, but it's very easy to get a legal copy in a lot of circumstances where you're not going to have to pay more to have it.
All right. What is a TPM?
Three letters.
Yeah, it means absolutely nothing to me. So I'm assuming that you know what that is.
Yeah, I'm just kidding here. But yeah, it's three letters. No, this is the thing, the acronym for what has been causing a lot of the grief with Windows 10.
Oh,
Bill, you've worked in this stuff a little bit. TPM, just to give a definition of that, is Trusted Platform Module. This is an item in the computer that handles encryption. And Bill, I'm going to ask you, because I know you've worked with this a little bit in doing your gaming machine. What have you found? Has this been a problem for you, or is it something that just kind of is in the background?
I had to turn it on so I could download Windows 11. That's what the real problem is the TPM is required for Windows 11 installs for the most part.
Yeah.
I guess there's a way around it.
Not that we talk about hacking, you know, we all love British Telecom, but at the end of the day, there are ways, you know, that you can do that. It's not recommended. And I have a funny feeling Microsoft's going to lock that down eventually anyway. But yeah, it's so basically what's going on is the Trusted Platform Module is part of your hardware. And there's different versions of it. So your computer can have a TPM and still not support Windows 11, which requires version 2.0. So if you have a laptop that's 4 or 5 years old, or maybe a little bit older, it might be on 1 point something, and that won't work with Windows 11 officially, because it doesn't have the cryptographic capability that they are wanting in the operating system. And this isn't all bad. I know this has taken a lot of hits just because of the situation it's created with Windows 10, but there is also, I would argue, a good reason for it to be there, and it has to do with helping to stop hacking and things like viruses. So it manages keys, private keys used for encryption, digital signatures, that kind of thing, records the state of the system during the boot process. And this is one thing that it does do pretty well. A lot of viruses back in the day would come in and get into your boot startup sequence. So when you booted the computer, it would load the virus. And a TPM running properly will effectively stop that, because what it does is it knows what the digital signature or fingerprint of your operating system is supposed to be. And if your computer starts and it's changed in some way, it will either fix it or stop it, saying that, you know, something's wrong here and you need to check it out. It can also be used to create things like virtual smart cards, things like multi-factor authentication methods, fingerprint reading, all those kind of things. So there is a place for it. And it's not a bad thing, because it comes off this way, I know, being that because it's causing the problem with requiring the newer version of it that Windows is doing. But I would argue that, like with everything else, it would have been better to phase out the old version and give a little bit more time for people to be able to upgrade. Even another year or two would have made a huge difference to, you know, have this balance out a little bit more. But when you hear that acronym, that's what they are talking about, is a actual physical piece of hardware that exists in your desktop or laptop computer that has to be of a certain revision level to be able to run Windows 11. So, Bill, do you want to throw anything else in on that? I mean,
well, I know that Intel has on Intel boards, it's a chip that's actually on there, and in AMD, it's actually part of the CPU.
Yeah. So, and actually, that's a good question that I'm sure is asked, is can you upgrade an older TPM? So theoretically, yes, but I would argue that that probably wouldn't be a value consideration. Because by the time you would figure out how to do it and swap the hardware, if that's even possible on what you have, you're probably going to spend just as much as replacing the computer. And that's what they're looking at from that standpoint. Now, if you have something like a desktop and you know how to do it, you could potentially swap the motherboard and keep the rest of the components, and the motherboard supports the new version. That would work, you know, and save the rest of the unit. So there's some stuff like that that you can do. But one of the things too here is the cost of computers has come down so much in recent years. I mean, we just upgraded my mom's laptop, and the new one was under $100 for a Windows 11 machine.
Oh.
So, you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of like, well, do I spend $100 and get a whole new computer, or do I mess around with an old one that's a couple of years old? And that's, I think, what Microsoft is trying to at least play off of in their, you know, justification for doing this as early as they did.
What would you consider to be the weirdest game of the 1980s?
So we've been talking retro games and stuff here a lot, and this is one question that does keep popping up, which I thought was kind of interesting. Obviously, this is a subjective answer, and we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, so I'm going to just throw the ball to you guys and tell us what you think is the strangest game of the 80s, and then I'll give you my opinion. Bill, do you want to start?
Sure, I'll go with the E.T., which didn't really make it to market, but it was a very strange game for what it was.
So E.T. is a big story of the era. It happened right before the 1984 North American video game crash, and it was, in my opinion, a terrible game. Now, it actually did make it out on the Atari 2600. You could buy it at the store for a while. But, well, Bill, you know this. Why is the game not like the movie?
According to the story that I heard, is that the producers didn't even watch the movie, and they just created a game pretty much over a weekend or something.
To get it out. It sounds like the way they wrote Star Wars 9, but yeah. You're right. That's just the story I've heard. There's a lot of kind of lore that goes along with this too, but you basically, and again, Atari 2600 was a very early video game console, so the graphics are already blocky and all this kind of stuff. But the game was basically different screens with different color backgrounds where you moved your ET around and did something. And the something is what a lot of people to this day can't answer. You know, what's actually the goal? It did come with instructions and had some of that stuff documented, but it's like one thing in there, you do make a phone call, ET phones home, but it's not ET making the phone call. And I didn't know that's what it even was until I read about it later. So, you know, that's definitely one. And just kind of a footnote to that, anybody that's into retro games probably knows this, but it was so bad after the fact that Atari dumped the unsold copies of this in a landfill and poured concrete on top of them. And I don't know, this is also something that's in the lore, but it is claimed that they actually, for whatever reason, manufactured more copies of the game than there were Atari consoles in existence at the time. So, you know, people are going to want two copies, you know, a backup the frame on the wall or something.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay, Gretchen, what would you have to pick?
Okay, I really had to give this some thought because I don't really recall any video games or board games that were really weird, but I do remember a game that usually it was males, not the girls, would be playing this game. The guys would make a strange, it's a particular hand gesture, and they would... Okay. Put the hand gesture in a place where they would try and get their friends to like turn and look down or see the hand gesture. If you looked at the hand gesture, the guy gets to punch you. This was a game that the guys would play, and I think it was weird. I don't really understand why they were playing it, but they did. So it was this weird,
like a TikTok line.
It's a weird punching game. And yeah. I saw like a couple of years ago, somebody was saying, oh no, that's a racial thing. No, it's not a racial gesture at all. It's the punching game. You know, the guy's making this gesture. And if you look at the gesture, he gets to punch you. So don't ask me. I don't understand
it. I'm kind of glad I missed that one. And like I was saying, that sounds like a TikTok dare video or something. I guess
it
would have been pretty TikTok, but that's idea. Wow. Okay. Yeah. That I think you might've just taken the cake on the weirdest game. Mine's weird, but not that weird. So I'm going to circle back on mine to the video game era. And I'm going to talk about a game called Bubbles.
Okay. That sounds vaguely familiar.
It was in the arcades. I don't know if this ever came out on consoles or not. It might have.
Uh-huh.
But the premise of the game is you were cleaning things in a sink.
Oh.
You were cleaning things in a sink, and you would go through, and when you got enough stuff cleaned, if I remember correctly, you went down the drain, and that took you to the next level, I think. It's been about 15 years since I've seen this, and I couldn't even find it on online. I'm sure there's some gameplay footage, but it was just a very strange concept, in my opinion, for a video game.
Yeah.
And, you know, so...
Were they trying to encourage house cleaning or the tidy bowl man or
well,
what?
That's what I would... I don't know. There's a scene in The Simpsons where they're trying to get Bart to go out and mow the lawn, and he has a Game Boy or that kind of a system, and he's playing virtual gardening on the Game Boy where he's mowing the lawn, you know. Uh-huh. That's what this made me think of. But it is a real game, and if you look out, you can find it. Overtime Arcade, I know, did a piece on it on YouTube. It's a YouTube channel that covers some of this stuff, and it's just a weird thing, but I think the punching game takes the cake, in my opinion, here today.
I'm still to this day wondering, why were they playing that? You know, I wouldn't want to play that, and I'm not volunteering to play it, so don't hit me.
Right, you know? right. Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so it looks like I'm next. So what happened to Comdex is the next question. And
anybody
I feel
that hasn't
the same
heard
way.
About this. Yeah, Comdex is a computer show, or was a computer show, that was like the place to be to feature new computer equipment.
Yeah, it was a big deal. It was in Vegas, wasn't it?
It was in Vegas. It was a big deal. It was before it cost $1 million to go to Las Vegas. You know, you could go to the show and you know, hang out and see the stuff.
And you were supposed to get all kinds of cool swag when you went to these. Yeah,
and you did. I was to a couple of those, and it was a cool show. The last year it was produced was 2003. And basically, two things happen. One of them, and these are the claims that are made, by the way, I have not interviewed anyone on this because I couldn't find anyone to interview that still seems to exist or will admit to it. So the claims that have been out there, generally accepted reasons, is number one, bad management. Things got screwed up. But the other part of it, too, is we still have another show that was kind of the opposite of the Consumer Electronics Show, or CES, that's still going very strong. But when we got into the early 2000s, computers really started to become a commodity. So you weren't showing off as much anymore the latest peripheral or the latest board or, you know, your new memory upgrade or whatever the case may be. It was a lot of what Comdex was. So in some ways, it just kind of became obsolete. They canceled it in 2004. Originally with the idea of bringing it back the next year, and then it was officially canceled for good in 2005. But this is a question that comes up a lot because I know a lot of people, especially that worked during that era, remember it because it's what you went to. If you were in computers at all, you went to Comdex. And it was a lot of fun. And Gretchen, like you say, you got a lot of swag and that kind of thing. But that's where it went.
Is it possible to print from your phone?
So I think to footnote this, phone, tablet, that kind of a thing. And the answer to this is yes, actually, they do support it. Depending on the version of your phone, iPhone, Android, and then what version of Android, the way that you would set up and do this may vary a little bit. So I will tell you how I did it on mine. I have a Samsung Android phone, and I have an HP printer, and I was able to get an app that just went in there and basically set up what I would call a printer driver. It works over the network, so you're not plugging into the printer or anything. So you'd have to have a printer that worked on a network for this to work. But I set it up that way. And yeah, I could just print off my phone just like I would my computer. It was actually very easy to do. I would recommend, if you want to set this up, look at the manufacturer of your printer, because they're most likely going to have the software for it. Because I found there was a ton of third-party apps that claim to do this, and they're a little bit sketchy in some cases. I'm sure there's some good ones, but if you can get one that's from your brand of printer, like HP or Canon or whatever, it's a little bit safer way to go.
All right. Do we really have to put everything on the cloud?
Why does this make me think of Valley Girl from the 80s? I don't know how many people even would get that reference.
No, but, like, oh my God, do we really have to put everything on the cloud? Yeah. Is that better?
that's better. You know, okay. I'm just thinking when we were in Bakersfield doing the last round of a jetpack training, we drove by that mall, Valley Fair, I think it's called, or something.
Yeah.
In LA down there. So, you know.
Yeah. As long as it didn't burn in the fires.
It's still there. As far as I know, it's still there. Leave in the comments if it's not, or if I have the wrong mall or something.
That would be the Galleria, right?
It was a Galleria. I might have the name wrong, but I know we drove by it. But anyway, to get back to the topic here, this kind of came up because the last couple of weeks we've had some pretty substantial internet outages. And one of them, there's a YouTube channel where he has a teleprompter that wouldn't work because the internet was down. Question, why do we need to have a teleprompter that works on the cloud? Well, the answer to this is no, you don't. But most stuff is going that way because it's more cost effective for businesses to develop in these platforms. I just hope that they figure out how to do backups a little bit better than this last time so we don't see the problem that we have.
Yep.
Well, that's it for this week. Until next week, this is User-Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User-Friendly 2.0, copyright 2013 to 2025 by User-Friendly Media Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Content is the opinion of the show's participants and not necessarily this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, CCPA, privacy notice for California residents, GDPR information for UK and EU residents, and any other feedback may be submitted at userfriendly.show. We welcome your input. Thank you for listening.